And we're back, continuing now, 8:37 on KID. Calla Curtis in studio. Also, Representative Ron Nate joining us this morning.
Good morning. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Neil and Calla. It's great to be on.
Well, so we have this issue. It's happening in a lot of our communities, but it's actually a broader issue. So this session, you all passed a bill. It's House Bill 216, which basically tells communities that they can't out-and-out ban something like an Airbnb, like a short-term rentals. But you've got individual communities that are trying to make policy and kind of tell residents in their cities what to do. It's kind of brewed up into a pretty big controversy in Rexburg, where you live. So maybe weigh in on, and they actually asked you to come and talk to their Planning and Zoning Commission about this issue.
Yeah, it's interesting how Rexburg has become the epicenter of this. You know, a dispute in one neighborhood kind of blew up to become a bigger issue, and it actually got to the level of us discussing it at the state level. And we passed House Bill 216, and House Bill 216 was really non-controversial over in Boise. It passed the House, you know, on a 63-5 vote and passed the Senate unanimously. There was only one voice of opposition in any of the committee meetings. And I think sentiment was pretty clear over there that, individual homeowners have property rights. And this is a property right that has become more to the front now because of the internet capabilities with Airbnb and VRBO and ways for people to rent out their property short term. And I guess a dispute or a misunderstanding in a Rexburg neighborhood has made it a big issue there. But really, the sentiment of lawmakers is that people have property rights and they ought to be able to exercise them. You know, you're allowed to rent out your house long term. Why shouldn't you be able to rent it out short term? And also another thing, too, is you're allowed to have guests over, you know, have family over for Thanksgiving, you know, yeah. And they come and stay and live in your house and park on the street or whatever. And that's not an issue. But if you start charging them money, suddenly it becomes a legal issue, apparently.
Yeah. So do you think, because maybe tell us exactly what the state law says, when it can be regulated, and do you think that Rexburg city officials are, I won't say going rogue, but I guess working beyond the spirit of that law?
Yeah, and great question. I think the spirit of the law is, we've kept it fairly general. Getting into the weeds about, you know, zoning and everything like that, you can end up with a, you know, 20, 40-page bill very quickly. And so we've kept it very, very clear, and really a spirit of the law thing says that you cannot pass any ordinances that have the practical effect or the explicit effect of prohibiting short-term rentals. Notwithstanding that prohibition, local communities have the ability to pass ordinances for the health, safety, and general welfare of the communities where the short-term rentals are operating. The presumption in the bill is that the property rights for them to rent out short-term rentals is there, and the presumption is that where they're operating, yeah, there can be these reasonable regulations, but not to the point of prohibiting them.
So it sounds like in Rexburg they're saying, okay, in certain zoning, yes, that's fine, but in a higher density area, it's not okay, and for health and welfare reasons, we're going to say no.
I think, you know, I was at the meeting, and one of the statements by the city attorney was especially concerning to me. He said that if it was in your mind about general welfare or health and safety when you passed an ordinance, then the ordinance is fine. I don't think that's a legal test about what they were thinking when they passed an ordinance. You know, that reasonable regulations for health, safety, and welfare are fine. It's doesn't mean that any ordinance you pass that when you were thinking about health, safety, and welfare is okay, because if it has the practical effect of prohibiting short-term rentals, it's not okay according to the law.
So it sounds to me like you need a specific reason. Like if it's going to be a threat to the health, welfare, and safety, you have to identify that, oh, this intersection here is going to be too congested if we do this, or that property there is going to suffer some kind of environmental damage, that they have to give a specific reason. I would imagine, I mean, that in my mind, that's how it translates.
Yeah, and I think what it is when we passed the law, the intent there was to keep it somewhat general there so that we didn't have to get into the weeds. Yep. And the thing is, we understood there's already a lot of ordinances out there about nuisances, about public safety, and we didn't want to violate all those, you know, make all those ordinances become in violation of this law once it was passed. So those nuisance ordinances absolutely are reasonable, that you can't have loud parties, you know, late at night. And so reasonable ordinances like that are fine, but to the point of saying, oh, we're going to regulate this so much that it is just not practical to run a short-term rental, that's crossing the line and crossing the spirit of the law.
All right.
So is there a next? Like, what's next?
Well, it's interesting that Rexburg has said, you know, essentially that they want to prohibit these in a way before this H-216 was passed, and so they passed ordinances that way. But then they suspend those ordinances for the eclipse. So when it's convenient for the city, they're going to suspend the ordinances. But by saying that they're going to suspend those ordinances that have the practical effect of prohibiting these short-term rentals kind of tells me that they're admitting themselves that their ordinances are, you know, beyond the spirit of this law, which is it says that you cannot prohibit short-term rentals.
I wouldn't say anticipate, but do you see a possible legal challenge to what Rexburg is doing?
Oh, I would sure hate to see Rexburg be the first place that has to spend money and time and resources to face legal challenges on this. Rexburg is the family community. I would rather see this settled, you know, between neighbors, you know, getting together and saying coming up with reasonable answers rather than going to the city and getting ordinances passed or having the city try and defend their ordinance. We should be able to work things out amongst neighbors. You know, we're reasonable people, and you know, I know my neighbors. If my neighbor had a problem with what we were doing, I sure hope they'd come over. Nobody said anything about the goats we had on our property, but if they did, certainly right. Would have worked it out.
Well, I have an elephant in my backyard.
So have you heard from people in other cities? I know, you know, there are people in Blackfoot, Idaho Falls, Pocatello, all over our listening area with Airbnb properties listed currently on the internet. Are you hearing from anybody else that there are cities that are maybe going beyond the scope of House Bill 216?
I think Idaho Falls passed an ordinance, and it seems reasonable. I haven't had a chance to read the exact ordinance, but it seems like they came up with a compromise that was reasonable to community members. And I don't think property owners feel like that their rights have been taken away to the extent that they need to challenge the law. So that might be a good model for Rexburg and other communities to look at.
Do you think, I guess the question that I have, why is it such a big deal in Rexburg? If this was kind of a yawner, no-brainer bill in Boise when it passed, why has this blown up in Rexburg?
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's just particular to that neighborhood, and that's the feeling I get, is that there were strong feelings in the neighborhood, and I don't know the history of the neighborhood, if there were animosities from the past, but it just got to the point where there was such a disagreement that it went to the city level, and the city felt like they had to address it. And so they had a few long meetings and figured out a system of rules to deal with it. And then it became a state issue because people felt their property rights were infringed.
Is it possible, too, because if you look at where Rexburg is situated, it really is kind of a gateway into a vacation mecca. You know, you've got Yellowstone, Grand Teton National Park, Island Park. And a lot of people from out of state come through. So is there, I would imagine there's probably a high rate of Airbnb rentals or short-term rentals in Rexburg that maybe you don't see in other parts of the state.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it is a vacation gateway to the Tetons, to Yellowstone, all around. And there's an entrepreneurial spirit in Rexburg, too. Yeah. A lot of families are looking for extra ways to make money, and that's great. And I teach economics, and as an economist, I'd like to also point out that there are a good system of incentives with short-term rentals that if I'm renting out a place, I want my house to look well, to be well-maintained, to be safe.
Sure.
If I'm a tenant, a short-term renter, I want to be a good tenant. I want to get good reviews so that the next time I want to go and rent from somewhere, that they're comfortable with having me as a short-term tenant. And so the incentives are good both ways. And there hasn't been much research on this, but the research I did find is that short-term rentals increase surrounding property values. And that's an indication that the incentives are positive, that they are making neighborhoods better.
Are the people in the neighborhoods that are opposed to this, have they cited anything specific that it, you know, how it is a threat to the health and the safety of their neighborhood? Is there any specific complaint that they
had? The testimony I've read is that they were uncertain about, you know, who was arriving, saw somebody going up the sidewalk with a suitcase, or, you know, extra cars that, or strange cars that they hadn't seen before. And you know, that's just kind of the new adjustment to short-term rentals, is that you do see those sorts of things. But I haven't heard any specific examples of of somebody being harmed or you know,
right,
being
really threatened. An actual threat.
That's right.
A briefcase is not a threat. And an out-of-state car is not a threat.
That's
by,
right.
By its
Isn't it interesting that this is something that was not even on our horizon? I don't know. A decade ago, you would, you know, state lawmakers would not have been looking at an issue like this. But with the internet, with the you know, with these apps and people traveling more and willing to stay in strangers' homes, I mean, and who knows what kind of law you'll be looking at in 10 years from now that we're not even thinking about right now. You guys have to be pretty nimble in Boise.
Oh, yeah. Markets find a way. And so this technology has opened the path to the short-term rental market that no one could have dreamed of 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And I view it as a testament to the free markets that, hey, here's a property value that even has more value now because people found a way to rent them. And I think it's great, you know, that we found this way to do it. We just need to be respectful of neighbors' property rights too. And I think if those that are doing the short-term rentals and those neighbors can just get together and figure out a reasonable solution, then great, you know.
A question I don't even want to ask, but I know how politics works. Has the hotel lobby been involved in this at all? I mean, has that been...
I haven't heard about it. I did see one piece of testimony there where one of the city officials said that a hotel was waiting to make their decision to come into Rexburg until this issue was resolved. And that gave me pause. I sure hope we're not making ordinance decisions based on getting a hotel there or not. But that's a testament that the short-term rental market provides... provides a great alternative to expensive hotels.
Or you know, giving a competitive advantage through violating people's property rights. That's concerning,
that's
too.
True. Exactly. I mean, I don't... Exactly.
But you didn't feel lobbying pressure in Boise when you guys were looking at this House bill?
Not at all.
Okay.
Not at all. No.
Yeah. Interesting.
All right. It's 8:49. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll continue our discussion, maybe shift gears and ask Representative Ron Nate about the legislative session and some other things that are
going
on.
And if you have questions for Representative Nate, of course, you can text them. Text the word YO to 67664 with your question.
What's all the buzz about Browning's honey? Haven't you heard that honey is nature's miracle? And nobody does honey like Browning's honey. Browning.
We'll see store for full details.
KSGT Jackson.
Fox News Radio at the top and bottom of every hour on KID News Radio 106.3 and 92.1.
All right, we are back now on KID. It's 8:54. Representative Ron Nate joining us in studio. And Representative, we do have a question via text. Could Representative Nate please explain his upcoming legislation regarding listing taxing districts on property tax statements?
Oh, yeah, that came from a constituent in Iona. He was in an area where they passed a school bond recently. He got his tax notice and couldn't tell right away how much his tax had increased or from that bond. And it took him 2 hours and multiple calls to the county and the state tax commission and back, and finally figuring out that the county had the information, the way to get it all along, of what his tax bill was for that bond. And so if they have the information, his idea for this bill was, it's called a transparency in bonding bill, that when there's a new bond, it'd be listed on your tax notice and how much for that item your tax is, so that we can go back and fact check. You know, this recent thing with community college, they were advertising $1,337 for every $100,000 of value.
Right.
It'd be nice to know when that goes into effect if that truly was the number that taxpayers end up paying.
Do you think you're going to get some support on that? Do you think that's going to go anywhere this session?
I've already got support on it. It made it through the House committee and the House floor, got over to the Senate, and it's interesting how some of the county officials really came out strongly against it, because it is kind of moving the cheese for the counties, you know, that they it is an extra step for them to do. But the agreement there was that we're going to really watch counties, see if they can find a way to do this without having to have a law require it. But if not, the sentiment of the Senate committee was, we can revisit this.
So what, I mean, what is the burden on the counties? I would think that that information is just widely available. That I mean, a spreadsheet, you know, I mean, it just seems like that's easy in today's technological age.
That was my take on it, that it just seemed like a little bit of programming there, but they were claiming that this was a hill too high to climb right now, that the space on the tax form wasn't enough for some areas and things like that. But we've made changes to these tax reporting notices, you know, many times over the years.
Is the process, and this is just my lack of understanding here, but is the process uniform throughout the state? You go to all 44 counties, the way they report to an individual taxpayer, is it uniform, or is there a lot of leeway and latitude there?
There's a lot of leeway and latitude. The format of the tax forms is different from county to county. It seems like there's about three or four different computer systems that are used for it. Mm. But in the law, there's about 21 items that are required, you know, the property, the description, and all those things, about 21 things that are required. They just didn't all come at once. You know, different things were added at different times. We're just saying break it out at the end so that we know how much you're paying for that last bond that was passed. And I think that's fair information for a taxpayer to have.
We also, we just have a couple of minutes left. We wanted to ask you about the challenge to the governor's veto that's going to be argued, I believe, on June 15th.
Yeah.
Weigh in.
I'm excited for June 15th because win or lose, we're going to get some clarity from the Supreme Court about whether the governor needs to follow the words of the Constitution, or whether we're going to have this interpretation that is a little more foggy on what the Constitution means in terms of when a veto is valid or not. But indications, I think, are positive so far. The governor's arguing he's relying on precedents, and there is a precedents case back in 78, but it was kind of a sketchy decision back then,
yeah, you know,
for lack of a better term. But this court has shown a willingness to follow constitutional principles and to revisit issues from time to time, like the Hoffer decision, to say, you know what, precedence has gone askew, and it's time to return to those constitutional principles. So that's why I'm optimistic. I'm excited for it.
So two things could happen. We could get an answer on the grocery tax repeal and what's going to happen with that, and then also on this precedent and what 10 days really means, right?
That's right. And the Constitution is clear. It says 10 days after adjournment. And I don't know how much more clear you can be than that. And I think this, the Supreme Court, I'm appreciative of them visiting this case and taking it up so quickly, because it is somewhat an urgent matter. If we're going to have this grocery tax repealed, retailers need time to adjust to it. And so we need to get it done quickly.
All right. That's going to do it this hour. Representative Ron Nate, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be on your show. You guys are great.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Fox News Radio at the top of the hour is coming up next, as well as hour two of the Neil Larson Show on KID.